Tag team and tell us some stories about what goes on there. So please welcome them.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great. I think what I'm going to do, what I set up to do, was to talk a little bit about memory loss in general, and then we'll move on to what behaviors you might expect, and then we'll go on to what we do over in Live Oak, okay? So just to begin with, memory loss, pretty much everybody experiences it, and the question always is it something I should be worried about? Okay, so as you get older, you're going to find that you're missing your keys, you're forgetting somebody's name, those kinds of things happen more and more often, and it's a little bit frightening, but I'm pretty much here to reassure you that for most people, that's pretty normal. So, yeah, I know. What a really good example of this, of how to explain this, or why we know that this is normal, is when they do research studies with in colleges, right, and they're trying to figure out how many things you can remember, right? So if you do it with a 21-year-old, you give them a list of items, you know, they can remember 7 to 8 items easily, and they can go on and on, you know, whatever. If you give it to somebody who's 50, it's less. If you give it to somebody who's 70, it's less. And what they discovered was that the 21-year-old actually doesn't have very much else on his mind. So you can expect that they're going to be able to focus a little better. You know, they don't have 3 kids, 10 grandchildren, or anything like that. They're actually pretty free. So luckily they figured that out. So that makes us all feel a little better. Okay, so when you have memory loss, you're going to find just little things will bother you. Misplacing something, forgetting names, those kinds of things are the most common. And really what happens a lot is that it's due to fatigue, too many things on your mind. Sometimes it's due to depression or your emotional state. Maybe not depression all the way, but just your emotional state. So there's a lot of things that can interfere with your memory. The question is, when does it actually become something you should worry about? And the guideline for that is, if it's interfering seriously with your day-to-day life, every day it's interfering, like you have screwed up your checkbook, you forget somebody's name every day, then you might want to go check with your doc, okay? So that's the kind of thing that you want to watch for. Let me think here. If your driving gets a little strange, or you get lost driving, those kinds of things get scary and are something that you need to kind of look for, to keep track of. One of the nice things that happens for all of us, probably all of us here, is that your intelligence level will always mitigate memory loss, because you have had you have better coping strategies, you have ways to work around things. It's interesting, when we would test people for dementia, you always had to take into consideration their education level, because they could hide it, right? They can hide it. you may go in and get a perfect score on every one of the neuropsychological tests, but, you know, they'll sit there and say to you, or their spouse will say, oh, he's got memory loss, there's something wrong, and if you test them, they look okay. You have to always remember that intelligence will make somebody able to hide it better. Okay, so when does it become dementia? So the definition is a group of symptoms affecting memory, thinking, and social abilities severely enough to interfere with your daily life. Okay? So it's memory, thinking, and social. They're putting all three of those in there. So one of the things that's interesting about dementia, there's a bunch of different causes for it. But one of the things that's the same pretty much for all of them is memory loss, all right? And why is memory loss such an issue? It turns out that when you, in your brain, you're trying to remember, or you're experiencing something, and the part of your brain that records memories, if you didn't have memories, it would be very hard to live your day-to-day life. The part of your brain that's recording memories is like the fastest moving. It's the fastest moving, and it's the fastest changing of all the parts of your brain. And because the neurons are designed to move quickly, they're also a little bit more vulnerable than all the other cells in your body. So all the other neurons in your brain. So what happens is those are affected first in almost every type of a dementia. Okay? So, I'm not sure I'm going to go into the types of... I mean... so there's a variety of causes for dementia, right? Dementia is one thing. It's this interference in memory, thinking, and social abilities, right? But what causes it? Oftentimes we say, oh, it's Alzheimer's. Or we say that Alzheimer's is dementia. They're not. Dementia is one thing that is a symptom of a bunch of different diseases or illnesses. So it can definitely be part of Alzheimer's, okay? It can definitely be part of Parkinson's. It can definitely be part of a Lewy body disorder. It can be something that comes up when you have multiple strokes. Little strokes, big strokes. So I always like to draw a picture of the brain. I just like to draw brains. Okay, here's your brain, one side of your brain, right? Okay, so, back here is a lot of where the control for movement is, okay? So if this part of your brain is working really, really, really well, you're going to be like an athlete or something. They have really good back brains. Okay, Parkinson's disease Parkinson's disease is a disease that where there's a chemical problem, okay? And it affects cells in the center of your brain and towards the back. So movement disorder is the first thing that's going to happen, okay? Alzheimer's is a different kind of thing where there's plaques and tangles. Things are kind of, it's like garbage is piling up. And that is generally like on the top of your brain, like here, and that's where your, and this is the memory center. So it's all through here, and it's going to affect those memory cells first, of course, right? But that has to do with a whole range of memory and trying to figure out how to do things, that kind of stuff. Lewy body is another thing where there's a little strange growth that comes into your cells, and that pretty much is up here and then goes into the centers of your brain where you're trying to remember things and do things. Strokes are different. Strokes are usually a problem with the vascular system, with the blood system coming in, okay? And the deal with strokes is that they can affect things not related to memory. All right. So your memory can be intact, but you'll lose functioning on one side or the other, and it has to do with where the blood, the arteries go. Okay. So the arteries go up on the sides and in the back, you know. And if one of those becomes blocked or breaks down, then the parts of the brain where that's bringing blood will close down. All right. So that can cause a wide variety of things. But if you have these little tiny strokes over and over and over, or a big stroke that ends up affecting memory, then it will look like dementia. But that doesn't always happen in stroke. So those are kind of the different things that can cause memory loss and dementia. Let me think here. Okay, so when you have a diagnosis of dementia, or you have a diagnosis of an illness that leads to dementia, what happens? So what happens is many parts of your life start to get restricted. You can't do as many things. You can't successfully navigate driving. You can't successfully navigate a shopping mall. All right. You can't. It's very hard to make decisions and go out and be who you used to be. So your life becomes more restricted. So that's why we would have a program like Live Oak. So seniors who are retiring, if they want to continue to be social, they may go to a senior center like the Cupertino Senior Center, and there's a lot of options for classes and different things to do, you know. But someone with a dementia can't manage that. So what we want to do at Live Oak is we want to create, it's almost like we're creating a small senior center that's structured for them. All right, and what the goal is, obviously, is to try to keep people brighter longer, keep them as bright as possible for as long as possible. That's the value of it. It also, you know, we also give people a break, the caregivers a break, so that they can go out and do, go shopping, take a nap, whatever they need to do, because you're caring for this person 24/7, generally, and with the memory loss, life becomes pretty difficult, and it's very different than what you know, it's different than what it used to be. So I am going to hand this over to Gail, and I think Gail is going to talk about what behaviors you can expect from somebody with dementia.
Well, yeah, some of that.
Hi, I'm Gail.
This is Gail Bloom. She is the program director here at Live Oak right now.
In Cupertino.
Cupertino.
Yeah, I see a lot of familiar faces. No, I got my stuff. Go sit down. I didn't bug you. Oh, maybe I don't. Do I have my glasses? No, I do need my glasses, Anne. Thank you. Something that happens as you get older, right? Start wearing readers.
And why did it happen to she's a little nervous, and we're out there in front of a bunch of people. She does not have a dementia.
No, I don't have dementia. Although sometimes, as my friends will be witness to, I walk into a room and say, why am I here? Right? It happens to all of you. You got to go back to the room you just came from until you remember. Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to go do. Anyway, I'd like to start with a joke. Because I think a sense of humor is very important for our clients and, well, for everybody, you know. It brightens your day. When you do have a good laugh, it just makes you feel better. It affects your heart, your soul, your mind. Makes you feel like you can be more social, you know. So I'd like to start with a joke. Two old guys, Abe and Sol, are sitting on a park bench feeding pigeons and talking about baseball. Abe turns to Sol and asks, "Do you think there's baseball in heaven?" Sol thinks about it for a minute and replies, "I don't know. But let's make a deal. If I die first, I'll come back and tell you if there's baseball in heaven. And if you die first, you do the same." A few months later, poor Abe passed on. One day soon afterwards, Sol was sitting there feeding the pigeons by himself when he hears a voice whisper, "Sol, Sol." Sol responds, "Abe, is that you?" "Yes, it is, Sol," whispers Abe. Sol, still amazed, asks, "So is there baseball in heaven?" "Well," says Abe, "I've got good news and bad news." "Give me the good news first," says Sol. Abe says, "Well, there is baseball in heaven." Sol says, "That's great. What news could be bad enough to ruin that?" Abe sighs and whispers, "You're pitching on Friday." See? It's a laugh, right? So at Live Oak, we have people that come in that do need a social structured environment. They need assistance in their daily routine. And we have people that have a variety of things. I have people that have Alzheimer's, people that have dementia caused by age, because that's very common as we age. Parkinson's, people that are coming in that have Parkinson's, and eventually that does affect their memory and their brain and causes hallucinations. Also Lewy body. So our center every day sees a variety of different illnesses and different people, different ethnicity. God, it's hard to say. And so we really kind of, our program is designed to include everybody. If I have 20 clients in that day, I might have 5 people that are very, very high functioning doing crossword puzzles. I might have 5 people there that no longer know their words, but if I start singing "You Are My Sunshine," they know every word to the song. So it's critical that we provide 4 different enrichments: cognitive stimulation, physical, stretching and exercise is very, very important to keep the body healthy and the mind, and nutrition. Eating better is proven to help retain memory, and music therapy. Music is very, very important to our clients. As I said, some people don't remember their words, but if they're listening to something that brings them back to the days when they were younger and can start singing every word to the song. In our environment, we are very inclusive. That means that my higher functioning people are very inclusive of the lower functioning. It's very important in that social environment that everybody is a part of the group. It's almost like going to your homeroom in high school, right? You have the jocks, the nerds, you know, all the different kinds of people, the hippies. But they all were together in that room, all working together. And that's kind of the environment that I get to go to every day. I actually wake up and am excited that I get to go see these wonderful people in their. Now I want to talk a little bit about some sad things. For instance, you know, there's about 8 million people in the United States that have Alzheimer's right now. In 2050, they expect that to be around 13 million. Word needs to get out somehow through the communities that there are support groups available to people going through this. I mean, when you're there with your doctor and you're told that you have Alzheimer's or some kind of disease like that, I mean, that wrecks your family, right? You're just, well, this is not what we planned on. Well, it's time to make a new plan. And when families come in and talk to me, I want to let them know that it's really important to start the cognitive stimulation as early as possible. You know, you have somebody come in and say, "Oh, no, my husband, he won't come in here because, you know, he's too high functioning for this place." Well, he's really not. He needs to start right now, because it's also important that our clients, as they progress through the disease, have a routine. Routine is critical for people that have memory loss and Alzheimer's. I mean, just as if you had a 3 or 4 year old, you know, you eat dinner, you get your story, you have your bath, you go to bed. Similar with a senior. So funny, I have this one client, I'll call him John. John was only coming to the center 3 times a week, and he knew somehow that we were open 5 days. And he couldn't drive anymore, of course, you know, he couldn't even get dressed anymore. But one day he went in, one day when he wasn't supposed to come, wanted to be there because it was part of his routine. Got the keys out of his wife's purse, got in the car, and drove over to the center. Right? Because that was part of his brain that he should be at class, because that's pretty much how I refer to it, class. You know, so it is important for routine. Of course, he started coming 5 days a week after that. We called his wife, and she said, well, let him just stay there then. You know, I'll get a ride over to get the car. And then, of course, she had to lock the keys, as well as many other things, the doors. Another funny thing, or not a funny thing, but something I wanted to share with you is don't sweat the small stuff. I have people that come in, and they're upset and tired. They've been their caregiver, you know, and they're not getting any respite. They don't seem to want to go out and communicate with people. They're kind of isolated. Well, that's the wrong thing to do. It, just like with raising a child, it takes a village to help people through this really difficult time. And you need to reach out and contact your friends, your church, whatever group or organization you belong to, and reach out, because people will help. People want to help, right? So it's really, really important to do that. And at the same time, you, as I always used to say with my family, is, you know, you got to pick your battles. I had a woman come in and tell me, my husband, at night, he comes and puts 5 different outfits out on the bed, you know, at night. And then he gets up that morning and he puts 2 of them on, right? And I say, okay, but that's all right. Not a big deal, right? Don't worry about it. Have them come to the center. Got 2 pairs of pants on, two shirts. That's okay. You got to let those things go. Another woman came in and said, my husband is putting, you know, 3 huge gallon bottles of water next to his nightstand. And I said, okay, he must be thirsty, right? Those are the small things that you can just get through. You have to let those kind of things go. You have to concentrate more on the being safe, making sure that you're in a safe environment. You may have to start locking up some of the jewels, because another thing that some of our clients do is get up in the middle of the night and start finding things and hiding them from their families. I don't know what part of the brain tells them to do that, but it definitely does. So part of that conversation is the do's and don'ts, because there's a lot of do's and don'ts. So I'm going to read through them here. I brought extra copies, too, if you'd like to put these close to you, because I've actually had clients say they've taped it on the wall, and it helps them every day, you know, remember. But one thing, you don't reason with somebody who has memory loss. There's no reasoning. They can't reason. So here's an example. The patient, what doctor, you know, the patient says, what doctor's appointment? There's nothing wrong with me. And don't try to reason with them. You've been seeing the doctor every 3 months for the last 2 years. It's written on the calendar. I told you about it yesterday and this morning. Don't do that. What you do say is, it's just a regular checkup. I'm sorry if I forgot to tell you, right? So you switch it. Don't argue. There's no point in arguing, right? The patients, I didn't write this check for $500. Someone in the bank is forging my signature. Don't say, what? Don't be silly. The bank would never be forging your signature. What you might say or do is, that's a scary thought. I'll make sure they don't do it again. Would you help fold the towels? You distract, right? Distract. Another thing is don't confront. Here's the patient. Nobody's going to make decisions for me. You can go now and don't come back. Don't do this. Don't say, I'm not going anywhere and you can't remember enough to make your own decisions. Don't do that. What you do say is, I'm sorry this is a tough time. I love you and we're going to get through this together. And then you distract. You know what? Don has a new job. He's really excited about it. So distraction is really very, very important. Every day I'm distracting people. You know, they're wondering where their loved one is at 2 o'clock, looking out the, you know, where's the car? We distract them. We get them over doing something else. Don't remind them that they forget. Here's our patient. Joe hasn't called for a long time. I hope he's okay. Don't say, Joe called yesterday and you talked with him for 15 minutes. What you should say is, you really like talking with him, don't you? Let's call him when we get back from our walk. Okay? And this is really important because this happens all the time, is don't take it personally. You know, they don't know what they're saying when they're progressed far enough. Here's our patient. Who are you? Where's my husband? Don't say, what do you mean, who's your husband? I am. Do say, he'll be here for dinner. How about some milk and cookies? Would you like some chocolate chip or oatmeal? That's the hardest thing, right? When they start not remembering who you are. I have clients that come in and say, oh, where's my daddy? When's my daddy going to pick me up? You know, or referring to their daughter, is my mommy here yet? You know, it's just in their brain. So you just kind of go with it. And don't question recent memory. The patient says, hello, Mary, I see you brought a friend with you. Don't say, hi, Mom, you remember Eric, don't you? What did you do today? What you do say is, hi, Mom, you look wonderful. This is Eric. We work together. So you just keep going it. I only have a couple more. Do eliminate but from your vocabulary. There's no buts anymore. What you want to say is, you want to say nevertheless. You want to change it up, okay? Patient, I'm not eating this. I hate chicken. Don't. I know chicken is not your favorite food, but it's what we're having for dinner. What you should say, I know chicken isn't your favorite food. Smile. Nevertheless, I'd appreciate it if you'd eat a little bit. Okay? And do repeat exactly. The final one is do repeat exactly what you said. So, patient, I'm going to the store for a newspaper. Don't. Please put your shoes on. You'll need to put your shoes on. Do say, please put your shoes on. Please put your shoes on. So you want to make sure you're keeping it the same so that they're not turning in their minds. The other part of that is don't ask open-ended questions. When you have someone who has memory loss and you ask them what their favorite color is, that's an open-ended question. They're going, I don't know, blue, red, green, purple, blah, blah, blah. What you might do is say something like, I like green. Do you like blue or green better? Two choices. So make it small. I've been with Live Oak for almost 8 years now here at St. Jude's. And again, I appreciate all. I see a lot of people here that have supported St. Jude's. You know, the program's been here for 39 years when they started. And 35 years ago or something, Live Oak took it over. But the program that we have at Live Oak is really structured to support the caregivers, give them a respite, to support our clients, make sure they're getting the different stimulations I mentioned. And overall, it provides just this warm feeling of community. And I think that that's one of the most important for the caregivers and the clients, is to feel like they're part of something and not being isolated. sitting at home alone. There's nothing worse when somebody comes in and I ask them, well, what does he do during the day? Well, he sits and watches sports and then maybe takes a nap at 10 and then maybe eat lunch and then stares at a wall for an hour and then takes another nap, you know. The other thing I do want to say is it's proven that when for us, and we get this feedback all the time, is that it changes the life of the client. They come to our site, they get to have the whole day, they get lunch, the socialization, they go home, they have a better night's sleep, right? They go home, they're happier. And those who are higher functioning can talk about their day. Oh, we had heard the great band today, or we did this great art project. Or this new yoga teacher came in and I learned some new stretching exercises. They feel like they're part of the family. So with that, I just want to welcome any of you to come by and take a tour of Live Oak if you need to, or come and get any information from me. And Kim? Kim, my assistant, is here. Kim Adams is my... They all know Kim. And Anne, of course, was the program director here for 3 years. I was her assistant. So, and I learned a lot.
I taught you everything you know.
She really... Not everything, but she did teach me, which... my caregivers need to learn, is to stop and not react. You have to stop and be thoughtful and think about how you're going to react, what you're going to say. You know, I used to be just, somebody did something, I flew, right? I really have tried, after learning from Anne, to give it a moment. Let me think about how to respond to that. If I have two staff coming in and they're all, I don't, like she used to do to me, I don't answer them right away. And I used to say to her, are you listening to me? Why aren't you telling me it right now? And then she'd come back a few minutes later and she'd give me a response, and it was a really thoughtful response. I said, oh, I'm learning stuff. So anyway, I want to thank Anne for that. And I want to thank you all for attending this forum today and learning a little bit more about aging and dementia. Great. Thank you.
Okay, so we have a few minutes for questions if anybody would like to ask any questions.
I have the mic, so I'm going to ask the first question.
Oh,
but
okay.
But I first would like to point out that the reason that Diane Rudy took credit for teaching Gail some of it, in case any of you didn't know, that Gail is Diane's daughter. And... So anyway, but my first question has to do with those who have trouble struggling for words. Do we try to guess what word they're struggling for? Do we ignore it? How do you handle that with a person who can't find their words?
I try a couple of different things. I try, if you kind of know the conversation, you can kind of try make a few guesses, and then you can just say, you know, this is very frustrating, I'm so sorry, and then distract. That's kind of the only way you can do it. It's very, very hard with word finding because they have something in their mind and they want to do it, but it's just not coming out. You can try it at first, but don't belabor it by any means. You need to move on.
Thank you.
Yes.
I found that it works to ask the person to describe what they're trying to say.
Sure. And so you can try to go around it. If they have enough words, they can go around it to describe it and bring it through. Yeah.
Do you have a fee structure? I mean, I'm sure you do.
Yes, we do.
That you could pass out, or we could talk to you about it.
Well, I can give you just a range of what we... So the nice thing about Live Oak, and especially because, you know, we get support from folks like you, is that we can keep it cheap. Okay, it's not very expensive. The fee structure goes from the highest anybody pays is $75 per day, and the lowest is $25 per day. And that depends on the person's and the family's income. Just we have a fee schedule for that.
we never want the fee to stop anyone from coming. You know, it's more important to us for people get the respite, the caregivers get the respite, and the clients get the stimulation. So if people don't have the money to come, we have other sources and grants and things that we can look at. So money should never be an issue.
Yeah.
You talked about the process of dementia a little bit. Could you talk about the role of hearing loss and how that may or may not affect the individual?
Well, hearing, you want to, okay, you can add to it. Hearing loss is huge for folks, okay? So hearing loss, when you really need to make sure you know what the hearing level is, because without knowing, you could attribute it to dementia, and that's not fair, right? So hearing loss, in general, most people aren't patient enough to figure it out with a person that they meet. And that person's life can really kind of close down, shut down quite a bit, because they're not hearing what's going on, they're not aware, and people aren't making the effort. At the center, you know, we are very careful to note who's got hearing loss, who doesn't, and we make whatever exceptions we can to make that work. But it's really a problem, because it can look like dementia.
And hearing loss is an isolator. If the person can't hear what's going on, then they're not participating in any of the program events. So we not only talk really loud, right? And when people come in the morning, I actually honestly go around to people and say, hey, is your hearing aid on? Right? I do. I ask, because it's important for them to be able to hear, to process. Although I do have to say, I have this deaf woman who comes in. She can't hear anything. And this is her walking in. This is her throughout the whole day. The giant smile. So a lot of what we do is by hand movement, hand gestures, facial expressions, and she giggles a lot. And I think when we have music, she feels the vibration. But hearing is critical and should be the first thing that you look at.
But does it contribute?
No, it doesn't contribute.
Isolation might.
Contributes.
Yeah, but generally if you can get to them and interact, it's not going to cause anything. It's just going to be, you know, a little bit of a barrier. In conjunction with that, the city of Cupertino is changing quite a bit. So we have a lot of different folks coming in, and we have some people who actually don't speak English. And this is a trick for us. One of the things I love to do is to do things that are visual, spatial, because that can go across language. So we try that. But what's really interesting is the same idea. I think because the formula of the structured environment is so successful, it's the same thing. Mai comes in, smile all day. She's happy all day, and she doesn't speak any English. So we're keeping it simple enough, and there's enough going on around them that they can participate in, that it's not as big a barrier as you might think.
Yeah. Thank you for your comments about it taking a community. One of the focuses on this community is to deepen our relationships this year. This will be the focus. And deepening that relationship builds awareness of maybe some things that you did not want to be aware. And I'm talking about abuse, I'm talking about parasites and that sort of thing. Do you have any comments, or do you deal with that element of elder, anything to do with elder abuse?
Well, yeah, I am mandated to report anything, you know, it would be against the law if I didn't report something that I saw or witnessed. Well, there's the community care licensing.
Licensing.
Any licensing, I mean, even to the point that you would go to the authorities if you thought something was really happening at home. It has happened where I've had a client come in and they had sores. And we all know about bed sores, right? And that's what it ended up being. The other thing that is hard for people who have dementia or Alzheimer's or memory loss is the cleanliness of their body. And, you know, it's very important to make sure that they're cleaning all the right places. And because, you know, you can get a urinary tract infection. And believe me, a lot of our clients have had those. And it really causes chaotic. They hallucinate. They go off their rocker. It's serious. It is. And so it's really important to stay clean and
one of the things, you know, when I first came on board, I just thought, you know, we're doing this program for the clients, and, you know, we're going to have a great cognitive stimulation thing. But what really becomes clear is we are huge in educating the family, the caregivers. And part of what you're saying about abuse, you know, every situation where it looks like abuse or neglect is a huge discussion. And it usually doesn't happen in one day. We're not really quickly picking up that phone. But a lot of what we need to do is educate people. We're educating people on cleanliness. We're educating people on how to treat the person with dementia, all these do's and don'ts. A lot of family members come in and they don't understand any of that. So we're taking them step by step through that. We can avoid or end things that look like abuse by education. And we try to be careful about when we report. We have reported in the 3 years that I've been there. Between all four sites, there's four Live Oaks. You know, we've reported at least 5 times in the last 4 years. So it does happen, but we try to address it one-to-one with the caregiver.
Actually, the other day, since you brought this up, I had a gentleman come in, and he was looking to bring his wife. And we're talking, as I do, because I want to get to know the families and their thoughts. And he said, oh, yeah, well, she lost 9 pounds. And I said, oh, well, that's a lot of weight to lose. And so he took her to the doctor. Well, she was malnutrition. And he said, and I didn't know that because I wasn't eating breakfast with her. He was following the same routine because he was in somewhat of a denial about the disease with his wife. So he would get the paper, go in another room, read the paper, have his coffee, fully expecting that she was making breakfast for herself. He'd see a bowl, but there was no breakfast. And so, you know, of course, the doctor educated him real quickly on the fact that he's going to have to cook breakfast for her and, you know, be a better caregiver. So a lot of what you say is denial related. You know, when you're going through this disease and you're the caregiver for somebody, it's easy to think, oh, they're not that bad. You know, I still see Ed doing good stuff, you know. It's denial, and by doing that, you're putting their safety at risk. So it's something that you really do have to consider. You know, again, when you're in the office and the doctor comes over to you and says, you know, I'm sorry, but you've been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, that's a huge loss. I mean, it is. You go through all the different types, stages of grief. You do. You know, there's the denial, the anger, depression. You know, you go through all those, and you may go through it throughout the disease. It's not something that's just you're going to go through and it's going to go away, right? You might do different things at different times. And as a caregiver, I want you to know that it's okay. It's okay. You have the right to be angry. You have the right to say this was not part of the plan. And if you get into a real big depression where you just aren't going out socially, you're not answering the phone, your friends are calling you, then you need to go see somebody. You need to go see a therapist. The best thing you can do as a caregiver for yourself is to make sure you're taking good care of yourself, because if you aren't, you're not going to be able to take care of them. I had a woman come in one time. I have this happen all the time, actually, but a woman came in, we're sitting down, we're talking at my office, and she just collapses. She's hysterically crying. She hasn't had rest in months. Unfortunately, her children weren't close by, and she didn't feel like she could reach out to anybody for help. She was exhausted, and because of all that, she was getting sick. And it was more stress, on and on. Finally, I said, you have to go to the doctors. I took her husband in, and I worked with her on making sure that she was started taking care of herself. And within 2 weeks, she came back. She had a smile. She was standing up straight. She says, I can't believe I didn't think about this, you know, prior to talking to you. So it's so important that what we do is not only for the clients, because we really do love them and want them to have the best day ever, but it's also for their caregivers and giving them the time that they need to make a date with their friends, to go to lunch, to go have joy in their life. It's okay when you're a caregiver not to feel the guilt of having joy in your life. You know, you need to do that for yourself. You need to be a happy person, and you need to be involved in your community. So again, reaching out to everybody is you just need to do it. And I can't really stress that enough.
We have one more quick question, and this will be the last one.
Oh. What kind of credential does someone need to work at a place like Live Oak?
Just come. So,
just please come.
Even if you want to volunteer, we love volunteers.
We thrive on volunteers. Volunteers make it possible for us to make a much better program. So that's, we always love that. We get high school kids, we get seniors, we get high school kids' parents. A lot of people come to volunteer. In terms of what kind of credentials you need to actually be doing this, there's not a lot, except that you'd have to have, to actually have a job, you'd have to have some experience with geriatrics. That's the main thing that we ask for.
I will.
We currently, you know, the amount of money that you can make in a job like this is pretty minimal, so we can't ask for hugely credentialed people. We can't usually meet that. Although I was at such a time in my life that I could go ahead and take a job that gives that has a lower salary than I'm used to, and so I have kind of some nice credentials. So.
Thank you, Dr. Ann, PhD, gerontology, psychologist, on and on and on, plus a good drawer, art person, whatever. Anyway, I also want to just say, I need my glasses again. Other than Live Oak, there's many support groups. You can always call the Alzheimer's Association, Elder Care Locator, the Family Caregiver Alliance, the VA. If you're a veteran, the VA is very supportive of our kind of programs. There's lots of other daycares around here. Well, not a lot, not enough, but there are other daycares around here. Sarah Care, Avenida's, Saratoga, but you know, reach out wherever you're living, Daybreak and Sunnyvale. There are places for your loved ones to go and be secure and have a really wonderful quality day with some people that really do love them. And I don't do this for the money.
We need to be moving toward our service. And I apologize about that. I apologize for being late getting us into the forum this morning. We ran a little late on our 8 o'clock service. On behalf of this congregation, I want to thank you for all the work you do on our behalf and in our facilities and with our people. And know that we are duly grateful and thankful for your presence among us. So thank you for being here today.
I have...
Can I make just one statement?
Sure.
If you have any time to give just a few minutes a week to volunteer, you will get so much from it. I can't tell you how much that they do for us. I remember one thing in particular. My brother lives in Iowa, and they were going through some really bad weather, and there was flooding and so on. And I was kind of worried one day, and I mentioned it to one of the clients. And things were fine and so on. Anyway, the next time I went in, I was surprised how many, the number of clients that came up to me and said, "Is your brother all right?" I never thought they would even think about it, but they do. And I know that Linda for a long time was the cookie person because she would always bring cookies in. So
we could use
they do
another volunteer
a lot.
To bring cookies.
they do a lot for us too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. We have handouts. I brought a few monthly calendars just so you guys can see what our day might look like, as well as our lunches. The menus are in the back. Also brought my card if you ever want to call to volunteer or hang out. Thank you very much.